And literally, I thought, this is the most unfriendly category in the whole world. Everything seemed to be about fear and shame. And I thought, holy shit, this is the most unfriendly thing I've ever seen. And the friendliest word I could think of was hello.
If you're at all curious what it's like to start an ad agency at the worst possible time, this might be the podcast for you. That's because I started one last year, and my God, it is hard. So what I'm doing is I'm talking to people who have found success in our industry and then applying what I learned to my own life and business. If it doesn't work, I'm screwed. What's up? I'm just gonna hop right into it. There's a little bit of trouble in paradise, or I don't know if you could call it paradise, but you know, one of the things that I talked about last time was bringing on a full-time partner. So just to reiterate, I brought on a full-time partner. His name is Javier. He's the most talented creative I've ever worked with. It was a very organic evolution of our relationship. We worked together for, you know, 6, 7, 8 months probably before I brought him on as a full-time partner. And the nature of that deal was I gave him 50% of the company. I gave him a sizable salary, essentially. I'm not making nearly that much. And then the background is that, you know, I've invested like a ton of my savings into running the agency and kind of getting it off the ground. Had spent a year and a half working on it before Javier became involved. But he's that good that I was just able to be like, what do you need to come on full time? He has a family. And so he let me know, you know, this is what I need. He also had his own agency that he was doing the same thing as me. It was, you know, just him and one other guy and trying to get clients and that sort of thing. But he came over. We're now equal partners in Gush. And I was willing to, on paper, make a crazy amount of sacrifices. You know, like if somebody comes in and they're like, you've already invested this much in the business, and you know, how would you, why would you do that? And the answer is, he's just that good. And I was pretty much willing to do whatever. Now, this is like unusual to talk about these things so openly, and it's only going to get more unusual because I'm going to talk about some stresses that I have in the relationship, and it's ongoing. And that's, you know, that's weird. You know, people don't normally do that. And maybe it's not a good idea, but sort of the intention behind this podcast has always been to be as honest as possible, to give an inside look of what it's like to start an agency. So bringing on a partner is very much a part of that. Doing it on your own is lonely and difficult, and, you know, you don't have somebody to lean on, and, you know, having an equal partner is great. Overall, it's great. But we've run into some problems. One, I'm like the more not conflict avoidant, probably stronger opinion, stronger personality, you know, not a go with the flow kind of intense type guy. And he's much more laid back, works hard, but laid back, easygoing, that sort of thing. So a lot of the tension is probably coming from me and my strong opinions. But the reality of the situation is that, you know, he's of the belief that after COVID, we should be able to work remotely and only meet up in person once, maybe twice a week, depending on the workload. And there could be flexibility there. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, we should be in the same place, and we can hire freelancers and have them be remote, but we need to be in the same place. And some things have happened that have made me feel that even more strongly. You know, Javier's from Spain. He's relatively new to the English language. Despite that, he's, you know, really good at communicating and understanding, but there's still a bit of a language barrier. And there were a few times with the same client where things were missent or, you know, not, they didn't have the right copy on it. And we've sort of been in a place where we don't have an account manager. So we're responsible for our own things. And, you know, that's partially on me. I should have checked it. But ultimately, it's like, if we're in the same place, it's much easier to do that before something goes out. There's also, you know, missed deadlines that are happening on both our ends. And it would be helpful to be in the same place to make sure that we're working efficiently. You know, I moved to Silver Lake, to the east side of LA, to be able to work with him in person more. I sort of just sent him a list of all the reasons that I think it's important that we work together full time and be in the same place. I got a co-working space. You know, I want him to be there.
ideally every day, but even 4 days a week is like a must for me. And I've kind of just sent him a message where I'm putting my foot down and saying, this is what I need and this is why I need it. And I think I have a lot of good reasons for that. And then the other thing is that, you know, like I said, he has a family. He's making three times as much as I'm making. He's getting a full salary, basically, that is probably more than he would get offered by an agency. And it's, you know, he has a family and that's part of it. But it does cause something where you're skeptical of, you know, you don't have skin in the game. If this fails, you've been compensated as much or more than you would have been compensated by somebody else, probably. And that causes with me a trust issue of, you know, I'm not making enough to live on. I'm dipping into my savings. And, you know, that's a huge amount of money to invest, which puts us in a position where we can't invest in other things. And it causes me to question, like, are you doing what's best for the agency? Is this really the minimum you're allowed to live on after your wife going back to work and that sort of thing? So I'm not saying that these things are justified. I'm not saying that he hasn't been working hard. But between those two, it's put me in a position where trust, skepticism about where he's putting his time and that sort of thing are coming through, because we are missing some deadlines and that sort of thing. So I just straight up let him know this is one side of the story. Again, it's very unusual and maybe ill-advised to speak out against, in a way, your business partner expressing concerns. But I do think that this is just part of the thing where you could be aligned. Like, it couldn't be a better relationship in terms of, you know, us getting along, us respecting each other, us wanting to accomplish the same things and make cool shit. But it just feels like inevitably there's going to be problems. And because we had to structure a deal that is really unusual, you know, and I'm not the chillest person in the world, it's hard for me to overlook certain things. So what's happening now is that we're going to have to figure it out. We're going to have to find a solution that, you know, I feel more comfortable with. Ideally, particularly when it comes to working in the same place. Otherwise, who knows what's going to happen. Okay, so that was intense. Let's just skip ahead to who the guest is today. His name is Craig Dubitsky. I emailed him a long time ago, and he is the chief innovation strategist at Colgate. But even bigger, he's the founder of Hello Products, which are oral care products, which are stirring up the industry in terms of looking different from what's on the shelf. You know, it's not about, like, if you look at what's on the shelf with Crest and Colgate and all that sort of stuff, it all looks the same. And this is just meant to be a more positive looking, you know, not about all the shit that's wrong with your teeth. Looks different, looks a lot more inviting sort of product. And they've been very successful. So as far as starting a business and figuring out how to do your own marketing, which he does a lot of, and how to have a very clear voice that's differentiated in the market, I think that he's done a masterclass job. So it was really helpful for me to hear about this from, you know, a personal branding perspective, and not just me as an individual, but like, gosh, you know, like, what's our tone of voice? What's, you know, what's our mindset? And then also applying what he's done in his own business to our clients, because we're doing a lot of branding work. So without further ado, Craig. One of the like initial questions that I have when I talk to, you know, I've talked to people at agencies, I've talked to people on the client side, you know, and so being somebody who, you know, would potentially hire an agency, do you handle stuff internally or with agencies or a little bit of both?
In the beginning, when we started, you know, Hello was basically me and three people and a dog. So I wrote all the copy. I still write like a lot of the copy, if not all the copy. I write most of the copy. Now, sometimes we've gotten bigger. Sometimes I just edit the copy, and sometimes the edits are benign. Sometimes the edits are pretty severe. So, you know, most of that creative is done in-house. I have a design person that used to sit right next to me, and we would just bang shit out like nonstop. So in the beginning, there were no agencies. You know, there were no quote unquote creative agencies. We've tried like some different campaign ideas here and there. I think the most successful things we've done have basically been around using the voice of the brand, which kind of has certainly started with me, and blasting that stuff out because we have personality in the category where none of the brands really have any personality. So that was really the strongest thing. So I remember we were working with one agency and I sent them a deck, and I think it was a keynote deck, and I had like 484 slides, each slide just a one-liner on it. And they were like, all right, so you don't need us for copywriting. Like, you need us for some other stuff. Because I love design. I love marketing. I love storytelling. I love brand. I love people, right? So I'm giving you a long and long-winded answer to your very short question, like how does it work with agencies and Hello? But you know, we have a couple of partners here and there that we have done some things with. And usually it's because I've liked somebody's work and I've called them and thought, you know, you're cool. Like maybe there's some cool shit we could do together. It's really just been that simple. There hasn't been like, oh, we're going to have this huge RFP process and we're going to run through this. Like, no, it was like either I knew somebody somewhere or I read about somebody or a friend at another brand knew somebody or a friend recommended somebody to me. That's how it worked.
So has anybody ever successfully got into you through a cold inbound type of situation and been hired by you ever?
Well, I have to preface by saying it's not that we're like actively hiring lots of people. So it's almost like an unfair question in some regards, because it's not like, oh yeah, we're taking on all comers. Everyone should write, you know, then we'll read every single thing and figure out who the ones to engage. But God, I've had plenty of interactions. By the way, we're part of one right now. Like, mm-hmm. Did you and I know each other? Nope. Did you send me a note on LinkedIn? Yep. Are we here talking right now? Absolutely. Because, you know, you wrote something more than just like, let's link in. I want to join your network. But, you know, when you get one, like you sent, like, hey, this is what I do. This is what I'm doing. I'm like, yeah, we should, you know, I meet new people all the time. I love people, like for real. So that's why I get a little chafed probably more than most when I get, you know, so much spammy nonsense where I'm like, you know, if you really gave a shit about people and you really gave a shit about what you think you could provide in way of a service, you know, you would go out of your way just to put the person that you're addressing your note to, put their name in the email, say something that makes it sound like you're a human being. You've actually looked at the company. It is amazing how many people don't do that, like basic work. And it's pretty easy stuff.
So talk to me about, because you mentioned you did one advertising campaign that you thought worked. Why do you think the ones, and if you can use examples, great, but why do you think the ones that didn't work? And why do you think the one that did?
It's like probably important to define didn't work, right? Did we get views? You know, were there impressions? Yes. So from a purely technical standpoint, you could say they worked. But in terms of like having legs, having something that's going to like really help build a brand versus be a campaign. And I think by definition, campaigns are kind of short-lived for the most part. I think the ones that didn't have the legs to go the distance were probably things that were done probably very quickly, very opportunistically. In our case, I think it was because we had some new team members that wanted to kind of like run with things. And you have to let people run with things. That's, you know, otherwise, why would they want to stick around, right? That you have to give people the ability to run with things. But we're such a new brand and we had so much that wasn't in concrete yet. We got some work that was okay, but it wasn't going to really move, I think, any needles. It was just okay. And the stuff that did work, I think, was actually fundamentally more about the voice of our brand versus like trying to create something that was funny or something that looked a certain way. Like it was more straight ahead. And I think like our products are really great. And the reason why we exist, I feel, is very, very valid. And I think some of the other stuff was more noisy than it needed to be. It wasn't as like direct. It may have tried to be cute in a way that wasn't really all that necessary. So I think that's the stuff that for me didn't resonate as much. Again, I don't want to say it didn't work. Ultimately, it all sort of came together because Hello became the fastest growing oral care brand in America. You know, you learn a lot as you go along. And I think the last efforts that we did have proven to be the most powerful. And someone could say, well, that's because it was built on this earlier work. But I actually think the stuff we did most recently is built upon the very early foundational bits that made the hope of Hello, Hello, which was witty, you know, friendly, human, in a category that basically talked about killing and fighting and was all about clinical stuff. So I think those underpinnings were always there, but I think the last work we did kept it really simple, and it's proven to be, I think, the most adaptable and the stuff that's going to, I think, go the distance for us.
For sure. You talked about like your reason for being who you are, kind of your why, right? Sometimes I have the challenge when doing it for a brand or doing it for myself, defining it in like a succinct and compelling, truthful way that encapsulates everything. So how do you describe for Hello your why, or your why, your what is your reason for being?
Well, I like to say we're naturally friendly. Like, that means a lot of things if you unpack it. Naturally tends to mean effortlessly and authentically real. We have this adverb version, naturally. Like, we're naturally friendly. Like, it comes to us easily and simply and purely because it's authentic. And friendly to me means a lot of different things. It could mean beautiful to look at. Gee, it's friendly on the eyes, right? It could mean it's friendly to your wallet. It's economically approachable. It could mean it's environmentally friendly. You know, we're printing our boxes with soy-based inks, and we only use FSC-certified paper. We use BPA-free tubes. Isn't that friendly for the environment? Sure. Like, you know, friendship is supposed to be not a hard thing. If it's really hard, if it's too much work, then, you know, it's probably not such a great friendship you're in, right? If it's too difficult. So naturally friendly, I think, sort of encapsulates a lot. And part of the magic of something like that is, how do you get all of this thoughtfulness and caring and warmth and humanity into two words? How do you do that? Mm-hmm. And truthfully, I really feel like the real magic came in getting it down to one word, which is hello. Like, you know, trademarking hello was pretty fortuitous. And, you know, I think is really, truly, it's something that can't be understated, the value. I love names and naming. I'm kind of obsessed. And I have been for a really long time. It's probably because I have such a shit name myself, Craig Dubitsky. I mean, what a horrible name. But anyway, and, you know, I have a bad name. So I've always been obsessed with names and naming and the immediacy that they bring to things.
Talk about your naming process. Like, how did you, what were there names that you came up with that you were like, maybe that? Like, how did you come up with Hello?
It was Hello. It was like, that's the one. I was in a drugstore in Manhattan, and I walked by the oral care set, and I noticed a new pack that I hadn't seen before. It was a new toothpaste pack. I mean, I feel bad. I don't like to call out other people's stuff in an unfriendly way, but the product, the new box design looked like it had been dented, but it was actually an intentional design element to this box. It was really, to me, very strange. So that caught my eye, because I was like, wow, the whole shelf is filled with these crushed boxes. Well, it wasn't crushed. It was a design choice to kind of have this weird bevel on one of the corners of the box when they're, you know, sideways on the shelf. And the product had a hologram of an extracted tooth, which I was like, holy crap. Like, they spent money to put this foil on this thing, and they made a hologram of an extracted tooth. And I thought that was crazy. I mean, you couldn't recycle the box because foil and paper, you just can't really separate them very easily. But more important, I'm like, they spent the money on a hologram, and it's of an extracted tooth. And I thought, that's the last thing I ever want to see. Like, I thought I use these products so that the teeth stay in my mouth. Like, why are they showing me an extracted tooth? And then I diverted my gaze to the other products, and so many of them had extracted teeth on them, and it kind of freaked me out. And I started just to look at the ingredients in a bunch of these products. And I'm not a scientist, I'm not a chemist, but even as a non-chemist, I could see things that were a little just sort of off-putting and suspect to me. You know, so I see extracted teeth, scary chemicals, artificial stuff galore, right? Artificial sweeteners and artificial flavors. And everything to me, apart from scaring the shit out of me with extracted teeth, was about killing and fighting and eliminating and destroying and removing. Like, everything was aggressive and warlike. And literally, I thought, this is the most unfriendly category in the whole world. Everything seemed to be about fear and shame. It's all on you. Like, you fucked up. You didn't, again, like, take care of yourself properly. And all's fair in love and war. So arm yourself with this technical, clinical, toxic, kill, fight, eliminate, destroy stuff. And I thought, holy shit, this is the most unfriendly thing I've ever seen. And the friendliest word I could think of was hello. that was where it sort of came from. It was very visceral. It had like this lightning bolt effect for me.
Yeah, you just kind of felt it, right? It was just like, okay, that's right. I hit it. I'm big.
And in full disclosure, I've been the chairman of the advisory board for a company called Lexicon for about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. And Lexicon has, I think, the best naming agency in the world. They named Swiffer, Febreze, Dasani, Pentium, MacBook, Sonos, which is my favorite because it's a palindrome. What else is great? Impossible Foods, Lucid Motors, you know, which is a new one. That's all they do is they name things. I really think they're the best in the world. They have, I think, 83 linguists around the world. This is all they do. So I had engaged them years ago for something I was working on. And the founder of the company said, I've never met somebody who so appreciates what we do and really like gets the power of names and naming. And we became very, very friendly. And he said, I'm putting together a board and you need to be the chairman. I'm like, all right. So, you know, they didn't name Hello, but I really do. I've always had a thing for names. I think it's really important.
Like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yep.
Is a great shitty name. You think it's a good name?
It's a pretty great name.
What about
Death Cab for Cutie, right? Like,
I love that name. So I guess it's
awesome. I don't like that one as much. No, totally.
So yeah, because like sometimes it's just like Kleenex, I guess, is a good name.
But not really.
Yeah. Okay. So Kleenex. Okay. Let's just say Kleenex is.
I don't want to pick apart Kleenex because I just want to say, you know, on behalf of Kleenex, it's a wonderful, wonderful product. Anytime you can have a brand name that becomes the entire name for the category, you're in a pretty good place.
Isn't it possible that like a name doesn't matter then if it's ultimately you don't even think about the name?
I would argue that it's of critical importance because you don't think about this name now because this name has been around for, I don't know, 100 years or something, Kleenex. I don't know how long Kleenex has been around. But it's a very, very, very powerful brand because of longevity, right? It's a good product. I'm not saying anything about the product, but just the name. It's great because they ruled the roost for so long. Mm-hmm. So you have to qualify good in this case. It's good because it's got legs. It's been a sustainable, durable brand. Is it a great name? I would say no, it's not a great name. I think the idea of misspelling things, you know, clean with a K and two E's instead of clean C-L-E-A-N, it's K-L-E-E-N. Isn't that cute and clever? We've seen that for so long. I don't think it's cute and clever. I'm sure when Kleenex first came out, it was cute and clever, but now it seems a little, you know, trite and goofy with a brand new brand to play that game of like, let's just misspell it. That's going to be really clever. Well, you know, if we spelled hello, H-E-L-L-O-W, wow, wouldn't that be amazing? And there's some linguist who would say, actually, no, it's now halal and it's, you know, terrible. But I think that those are tricks from yesteryear that a modern human has been able to sort of see beyond. I would also argue that anything that ends in an X, I've made fun of brands that have X's in the name for a really long time because I was involved with Method cleaning products, household products in very early days. And I made fun of the names of a lot of the brands they were competing against or wanted to compete against because of the same thing. They had an X, Windex, Ajax, Borax, Oxidol. The idea was it's going to be better living through chemistry. And the X meant it was serious and scientific. Now, you know, SpaceX is great. The X Games are great. You know, that's a modern version of using the X. But, you know, Kleenex, Windex, Ajax, Borax, you know, you can go down the list, you know, and there's a lot of drugs, you know, that have X's in them. But I feel like that game is kind of done.
So then what goes into your naming process or the naming process at Lexicon? Like, how do you go about coming up with a great name?
There is a science to it, right? So there's phonics and sonics. There's the way certain letters appear visually next to one another. You know, there are just certain cues that trigger for people certain things. The shape your mouth makes when you say the word out loud. What other connotations occur inside your head when you see a word or hear a word? Like, what is a trigger for you? There are certain words that are just mellifluous and that are fast. And sometimes, you know, when everything's going quick, it's great to be Engelbert Humperdinck. Like sometimes it's great when every other band has the in front of the name. the Kinks, the Who, the Jam, the Kooks, the, you know, whatever. It's really cool to then be Death Cab for Cutie or the Red Hot Chili Peppers because it is a mouthful. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of ways to approach names and naming. What did you name your agency?
Gush. And it was because we changed the positioning of the agency and I just needed a name. And I come from the camp, and I'm probably wrong, obviously, but I come from the camp that like a name really doesn't matter. People forget about the name, like once they're exposed to it and they care about the product and like what's in it for them. So I was just trying to come up with something that like sounded cool and whatever, but I wasn't trying hard to create a process around it. And I ate a gusher. And I was like, gush. And then I looked up if the trademark was available for an ad agency, and it was. So
we're called Gush. But Gush is great because, like, when, you know, first of all, again, it's short, it's visually tight, it's pronounceable by most, and it has some fun and some lightness. And when someone is gushing, that typically means, you know, they're filled with pride and ebullience, and they're overflowing with positive emotion, right? So I think it's a better name than you're giving yourself credit for.
I like the name.
It's a great name. Nice job.
Thank you. We also like, you know, have gone into the naming game without even trying. Like we have two clients that needed research strategy and branding work, and their names just weren't right. And so one of them was a stick-on license plate that like just fits around your car. It looks great, that sort of thing. And they're really into aesthetics and they want to call it Flex Plate, but they want to be premium and like da 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 da. And I was like, that's an infomercial brand. And so we called them Piatto, which is plate in Italian. And
yeah, it's so much better.
So much sexier. Like, so
well, BlackBerry was going to be called Mega Mail. And Flex Plate, like Mega Mail, is overly descriptive and so much so that it becomes lifeless and kind of soulless and therefore kind of forgettable, right? So, you know, Kleenex facial tissues, but no one calls them facial tissues. Or if they were called, you know, like face paper, like no one would go for that either. Like, so I think you did a very nice job with your—
Thank you.
I mean, thank you. Not that you're asking me, but it sounds much sexier. You know, BlackBerry sounds much sexier than Mega Mail.
Yeah.
And Pentium sounds much sexier than ProChip.
I think I'm getting what you're saying. Let me spit it back out to you on the importance of names. So Kleenex was the only one. It just longevity, throwing it, you know, in your face until you just are like, okay, Kleenex is the thing that I use or whatever. But when you come out with a toothpaste, it's an extremely crowded category. And if you think about like, you know, the funnel of marketing, the top of the funnel is the name of the company. And so making a good impression, being differentiated and stuff like that. That's why the name's important. Like if I listen to a band and I really, really like them, you know, maybe ultimately I won't care that their name is Sawdust or something. But, you know, my first impression, it could have been like, that's a crazy name and I'm not going to double click on it. I'm going to double click on this cooler sounding name. I don't know. But I think, thank you, because I think through this process, I genuinely do appreciate a good name in a way that makes sense to me now.
It's a big deal. Yeah. I think it's bigger than most people, I think, sometimes give it credit for being.
So how did you go from this 3-person company? How did you get started and start to build momentum for yourself to generate sales and start to build?
I think a lot of the momentum was captured over many years and a lot of work. It seems like, oh yeah, there was this lightning in a bottle moment. We went from 3 people to 30 people like overnight and all of a sudden we're all these stores. It took 8.5 years. There were certainly times when I thought we were going to close our doors. It wasn't a straight shot. No one goes through unscathed. I have lots of stories where it was like a holy shit moment after another holy shit moment. The good fortune was I had some folks that joined me in the beginning that are still here, that are, you know, like the true believers, like, you know, where I feel like I liberated some of them from a very big CPG company is the way I like to put it. And I was like, we're going to change the world and we're going to make beautiful things people can fall in love with that elevate the everyday, that are, you know, really thoughtfully crafted, not just created and not just made, but crafted. We're going to put a lot into this stuff and that no one has sole dominion over good ideas. So you handful of people, we're going to have direct input onto everything that we do or into everything that we do, which is very cool versus like, oh, here's your little fiefdom, your little silo, your little discrete job function. It's like, no, the greatest marketing idea can come from somebody in finance. The greatest finance idea can come from somebody in supply chain. The greatest new product development idea can come from somebody in accounting. You know, it's like if you set things up from the beginning to be open and, dare I say, friendly to ideas, as well as friendly to the people that create them, you can unleash a lot of magic. So having that from the very first moment has been really helpful because we're able to bring in people that really believed, where it wasn't just a job for them. They were all employed before. They wanted to stay at their big company and go through the normal motions. They could have done that. That was a really big, important part of, I think, what makes Hello and made Hello in the beginning, but certainly it still makes it, I think, a kind of magical place. The other thing that was really, really important, and again, like good fortune and a lot of hard work, is that I had been through some other experiences with some other brands where, frankly, everyone in the beginning thought, you know, that's crazy, or you're crazy, you know, some pejorative negative term. Like Method was one of them, you know, oh, dish soap, it'll never work. You can't do it. You can't get on the shelf. It'll never work. Nobody cares about dish soap. Well, guess what? Turns out people care about everything, including dish soap. I feel very fortunate to have met Adam and Eric as early as I did. It was their idea. It wasn't my idea. I was just lucky enough to appreciate the idea that they had and to get involved and help line up the initial money and do some other things too. You know, having Method as an experience was certainly very helpful. And then I started another company called EOS and, you know, sat with a sculptor and two designers at my conference room table. We made this little spherical lip balm that became, you know, kind of a thing. And, you know, in the beginning, it was the same thing, like, oh, you know, you're making a chapstick. You know, EOS, again, did like some incredible things. And people loved it. They loved the design and the brand, and the Goop was terrific. It's a very good product. But because I had Method and EOS in my background, I had some things that had worked, and some that were really far out there, like Method and EOS at the time, that people just missed. They just didn't get it, but people got it. So I was fortunate to have all these things in my background, and over time had built relationships with retailers and manufacturers and, you know, distributors and all sorts of people that would help make something like this go. So when I decided to start Hello, I had, you know, an amazing design partner in the beginning. I worked with BMW as my global design partner when we launched. So I had these incredible designs. I had all my manufacturing, you know, sort of set up a whole supply chain, basically, you know, ready to go. And I had purchase orders from big retailers before I made anything. And it came down to the power of the idea, the way it was laid out and presented, the fact that I had, you know, basically been involved with a bunch of startups that had done some pretty interesting things. So I had a track record and I could leverage all that stuff. So again, like the magic has really been in the team, in believing and getting other people to believe. And then in making sure the thing you make is actually awesome. Like, that's the other thing. You have the greatest marketing and maybe you sell something once. If your product is not that good, but your marketing is great, then it's like, you know, you can fool somebody once, right? That's terrific. But we had to make something that was serious. Like, it is serious. It had to work. It can't just be like, oh, we have cute marketing and a clever name and we like design and that's going to be great. Like, that's terrific for certain products. You can get away with that. But it's like, you have to make a great product. Is your product really great? Like, if you cared about whitening, our charcoal toothpaste whitens better than some of the leading brands, quote unquote, extra whitening product. And ours is vegan, cruelty-free, made in America. Our mint is grown in the Willamette Valley by female-owned farms, fourth-generation farmers, women that own the farm. All these little things that make the product really cool, but it whitens better. It's a great product and it's a fraction as abrasive. And oh yeah, I could eat it, at least the fluoride-free version. And you know, we're in Walmart and Target and all these stores, but the big idea was to make a better product and make it for everyone. Like, make it as natural as we can make it as effective as we can make it, and make sure it was priced so everybody could afford it. And if you have kids, like, why wouldn't you use a natural product? Like, don't you want the best thing for your kids? So I can't stress enough. Like I meet a lot of startups. I'm an investor. I'm in a bunch of different funds and invest in things. And whenever people tell me about like, here's the exit up front, I'm like, I'm already exited. Like I'm out, because you haven't told me like why your product is awesome. You told me about how you see an exit. There may not be an exit. Why is it all about the exit? People tell me this all the time. They're like, well, now you're part of Colgate. Like you had an exit. I'm like, I didn't have an exit. We had an entrance. We're just getting started. This is amazing. And now Hello is part of that. Like, this is frigging great. I'm going to have a blast with this amazing team of people here at Hello and inside of Colgate. We're going to bring what we do to people all over the world. It's going to be amazing. So I can't stress enough, like, how important is like the real content, not your social feed content. That stuff is important too. Not how important is your name. Yes, that's important too. Everything communicates, so it's all important. But like, how awesome is the actual product? How great is the UX? How do you make sure that what you're making is really something that people can fall in love with? We have to make sure we elicit these great emotions that come from great experiences. And part of having a great experience is knowing that the performance is there. You know, it has to be great. That's what keeps me very excited to be unwielding about this stuff and just keep pushing. Like, what else can we do? What else can we do? You can't ever be satisfied. You can't be like, it's good enough. It's fine.
And that's what makes somebody successful. So yeah, man, thank you so much, Greg. Really appreciate the time. I learned a lot. There are a ton of useful things in here for me and for the people that will listen to it. So I do really appreciate it.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. I hope everybody is keeping safe and healthy. And clearly I hope they're all brushing and flossing with something. Hopefully Hello.
All right. Thanks, Craig. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So I just want to thank him and every other guest I have, because it's crazy. You know, the fact that these people are willing to give me their time is awesome. You know, he's the CEO and founder of this company, and then he's also working for Colgate, and it's, I'm sure he's got a packed schedule, but really appreciate it. Always learn something, and you know, hopefully you guys do too. So until next time, have a great day.